Engaging conversation on the most urgent problem of our day and what you can do about it.
Now, the End Abortion Podcast by Priests for Life.
Hello and welcome to Pro-Life Primetime News. Today is Friday, April 26th. I'm Leslie Palma. Abortion was back in front of the U.S. Supreme Court this week, with the justices hearing arguments on whether a pro-abortion federal law should supersede a state-level pro-life law. We'll be joined by John Bursch from Alliance Defending Freedom to talk about how things went in the high court. The third time was the charm for Arizona House Democrats hoping to repeal a law from 1864 that protects most babies from abortion. I'll have this story and more in Abortion in the News. Joe Biden, America's abortion extremist-in-chief, was in Florida Tuesday to decry the, quote, unbearable pain and cruelty of a heartbeat bill set to be enacted in the Sunshine State next week. Priests for Life National Director Frank Pavone was in Salt Lake City this week to attend Heartbeat International's annual conference. He'll tell viewers all about the conference in a video from the scene. The U.S. Supreme Court on Wednesday heard arguments in the second abortion-related case to be taken up this term. The consolidated cases, Moyle versus United States and Idaho versus United States, ask whether federal law can compel emergency room doctors in Idaho to provide abortions to pregnant women in an emergency. Idaho law only allows abortion if a woman's life is at risk. The pro-life legal powerhouse, Alliance Defending Freedom, assisted the Office of the Idaho Attorney General in asking the Supreme Court to prevent the Biden administration from hijacking the Emergency Medical Treatment and Labor Act to force Idaho doctors to perform abortion. I'm very honored to welcome to the show John Bursch, Alliance Defending Freedom Senior Counsel and Vice President of Appellate Advocacy, to give us a glimpse of what happened in court and what might happen next. Welcome to the show, John.
Thank you, Leslie. I'm delighted to be here.
So if you could just tell viewers briefly what the case is about and then give us your impression of how things went in court.
The case is about the Biden administration's manipulation of a federal law to try to override Idahoans' choice to protect life beginning at conception. The federal law, EMTALA, is the Emergency Medical Treatment and Active Labor Act, and it was signed into law by President Reagan in the 1980s to ensure that patients who showed up at a hospital emergency room who couldn't pay would still be receiving treatment if they had critical need of medical care. But it did not specify any particular medical treatments. It left that to the states. That's pretty much how the statute functioned for 38 years, that hospitals understood they couldn't ignore indigent patients who came to the emergency room, but no one ever thought that the federal government was telling hospitals or doctors what treatments they had to pursue until the Dobbs decision 2 years ago by the U.S. Supreme Court. Then the Biden administration reinterpreted EMTALA as a federal abortion mandate that requires abortion in emergency rooms around the country. And it actually sued Idaho as a test case because Idaho has one of the most life protective laws in the country. It begins at conception and includes exceptions only for the life of the mother, as you mentioned, as well as rape and incest. And so that was the case that came to the Supreme Court on Wednesday.
So any surprises in the court that day? You know, did judges ask anything you weren't expecting? The justices ask anything you weren't expecting?
No, we work and train so hard for these cases. There were no unexpected questions. It was a little surprising to me that the attorney who represented the United States, the Solicitor General, made some key concessions that we thought were really important. She said that hospitals and doctors who have pro-life convictions could not be forced by this law to provide abortions in hospital emergency rooms. And that's the exact opposite position that the administration has been taking for the last 2 years. In fact, we have a separate lawsuit that came out of the federal courts in Texas to sue the Biden administration for forcing pro-life doctors to perform abortions in the emergency room. So that concession was really key. In addition, the Solicitor General agreed that the court needed to look outside EMTALA to determine what its content was. And we think that's significant because EMTALA is part of the Medicare Act, and the Medicare Act is built on a foundation of state law. So state law rules regarding what drugs you can prescribe and how informed consent would work, all those types of things are the types of things that the federal government always looks to in the emergency room. And if that's true here, then Idaho's pro-life law should apply.
So although a lot of the news stories said that the female justices were really grilling the Idaho attorney, Amy Coney Barrett, Justice Amy Coney Barrett, did she ask anything that concerns you?
No, she asked a couple of questions, but nothing that really concerned us. She's actually the one who raised the religious liberty question and forced the United States attorney to admit that there was religious liberty. What was unfortunate about the other justices, who are all on the so-called left of the court because they were appointed by Democrat presidents, is that they asked question after question, and they didn't allow the advocate on our side very much time to answer those questions. And so it seemed more like a lecture than an actual colloquy where people were interested in what he had to say. But I think for the most part, he was able to answer all of their questions. The most severe hypotheticals that the other side tends to ask are all covered. A woman comes to the hospital and she has intense bleeding, or there's a risk of a stroke or something else that's going to put her life at risk. Idaho law is very clear that the Idaho doctors can do whatever it takes to save her life. But it's in those situations where the medical condition is less serious that Idaho wants the doctors to preserve life. And what's ironic is that EMTALA, the federal statute, wants to protect life too. Congress amended the statute in the 1980s to include the unborn child as a second patient. And so when you go to a hospital and you're unable to pay and the hospital is treating you pursuant to EMTALA, there's actually two patients if you're pregnant. And in that way, the federal law and the state law, the Idaho Defense of Life Act, are really in alignment. They share the same goal to protect unborn life whenever it's possible.
In fact, the term unborn child, I think Justice Alito mentioned that's in the law itself.
Yes, and the government's lawyer pretty much just encouraged him to ignore that, encouraged all the justices to ignore that. The point that Justice Alito made is that it's pretty absurd that a law that Congress would pass would protect unborn life and then be interpreted to mean that it requires abortion. I don't think there's anybody who thinks that's reasonable.
So is this one of the cases that we're going to have to wait till late June to have an opinion?
Almost certainly. It's almost always the case that the controversial cases at the court, and that certainly includes pro-life cases, are decided at the very end of June. And that's particularly true when they're heard late in the oral argument year. The April arguments that just concluded today are the very last oral arguments of the term. And at ADF, we were really proud and honored to be able to have the first two pro-life cases at the U.S. Supreme Court after Dobbs, which we were also intimately involved in. As you may have spoken about on your show previously, we had the FDA abortion pill safety measures last month in March, and now we have this one in the emergency rooms. And it's just a privilege for us to stand on the side of life and on behalf of pro-life doctors who do not want to participate in abortions against their deeply held religious beliefs.
All right. Well, we're praying for a good outcome, but what's your best guess?
My best guess, it's always dangerous to try to look into the crystal ball. I think that a majority of the justices will find a way to rule in favor of Idaho. The government really didn't seem to be making much traction with its arguments that it could dictate how doctors should behave in the emergency room, even if it violates state law. There was one simple example that kind of demonstrated that. We pointed out that in New Jersey, as in many other states, they have limitations on when you can prescribe opioids. So if you went to the emergency room and you had a severe chronic pain in New Jersey, you couldn't get opioids for more than a 5-day prescription because of concerns about the addictive nature of opioids. But under the federal government's view, if the doctor determined that this person needed 10 days of opioids or 30 days or 100 days, then the doctor's personal judgment would supersede state law and he could do something that was illegal. Well, again, for 38 years, no one ever thought that's what this statute accomplished. And so that made it pretty obvious that whether you're talking about opioids or medical marijuana or informed consent, or in this case, abortion, that's not necessary to save the mother's life. In all those cases, we leave it to the states in their best judgment to regulate the emergency room.
All right. Fascinating. Well, I really thank you for making the time to come on today. And like I said, we're praying for the right result.
Thank you so much, Leslie.
Thanks. Good night.
God bless. Bye-bye.
Three Republicans in the Arizona House broke ranks on Wednesday and voted with Democrats to repeal a law that protects most babies from abortion. The law was originally passed in 1864 and enforced until the Roe v. Wade decision in 1973. It was enacted again after Roe was overturned in 2022, but then placed on hold by a legal challenge. Earlier this month, the Arizona Supreme Court upheld the law as constitutional, and abortion advocates in the state have been apoplectic ever since. Democrats in the House now have been successful in passing a bill to repeal it. The bill should be taken up next week by the state Senate, which has a slim Republican majority. Tennessee Governor Bill Lee is expected to sign a bill making it a criminal offense to take a minor girl across state lines for an abortion. The bill passed the Senate 26-3 earlier this month. The House passed it by a vote of 75-24 on Tuesday. Also on Tuesday, Governor Lee signed the Baby Olivia Act, mandating that schools show a video of fetal development or a high-resolution ultrasound as part of their family life curriculum. The law cites, as an example, a three-minute computer-generated video produced by the pro-life group Live Action, but it does not require that exact video to be shown. Similar legislation has passed or is being considered in Missouri, North Dakota, West Virginia, Kentucky, and Iowa. Maine's pro-abortion governor, Janet Mills, on Monday signed a law that will shield the medical records of out-of-state residents traveling into Maine to abort their children or to have gender-mutilating surgery. Planned Parenthood is thrilled with the new law, while critics point out it is yet another assault on parental rights. On the federal level, the Biden administration's Department of Health and Human Services this week announced a new rule that cracks down on prosecutors' ability to obtain abortion records. The rule strengthens a 1996 privacy law, the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, or HIPAA, by shielding the medical records for those seeking an abortion. Priest for Life's Brian Kemper and Carol Seidenberg from the Silent No More Awareness Campaign were among thousands of pro-lifers in Sacramento Monday for the fourth annual California March for Life. Carol was interviewed by a CBS affiliate about an abortion she had at Planned Parenthood. Let's take a look.
I was scared. I was frightened. I didn't know what to do. And I went to Planned Parenthood. They only gave me one option. They confirmed me in my fear rather than building me up in my identity as a strong young woman.
Carol Seidenberg has had two abortions since she was 17.
And I've come to deeply, deeply regret the fact that I had an abortion, and I can't do anything about it to change it now.
Now, she and others are fighting for change in California, her home state that passed dozens of laws over the past 2 years expanding access to abortion.
Pro-abortion Governor Gavin Newsom never showed his face, but he was in the news this week for proposing an emergency bill that would allow Arizona abortionists, who soon could find themselves out of work, to kill babies in the Golden State. And he released a hideously untrue commercial targeting an Alabama law that makes it illegal for people to help minor girls leave the state for abortions. And finally, the fertility rate in the U.S. has fallen to a record low, dropping to 1.62 births per woman in 2023, a 2% decline from a year earlier, and the lowest rate since the government began tracking fertility in the 1930s. Just 3.59 million babies were born in the U.S. in 2023. And that's abortion in the news. The abortion extremist in chief was in Florida Tuesday to rally support for his re-election campaign in a state that voted for Donald Trump in 2020 and where Republicans now outnumber Democrats by some 900,000 voters. During a speech at a community college in Tampa, Joe Biden said the heartbeat law set to take effect next week in Florida will force women in the state to endure, quote, unbearable pain and cruelty. And he blamed Trump for, quote, cruelty and chaos across the country following the overturning of Roe v. Wade. Abortion is one of very few issues where voter support is higher for Biden than Trump, and in Tampa, Biden even managed to utter the word abortion a few times, something he ordinarily avoids. Reacting to Biden's speech, Florida's pro-life governor, Ron DeSantis, said Floridians are not buying what Joe Biden is selling, and in November, we're going to play an instrumental role in sending him back to Delaware, where he belongs. Biden and Trump scored overwhelming victories in the Pennsylvania primaries on Tuesday. Republican Nikki Haley, who is no longer in the race, also got 155,000 votes. In the race for U.S. Senate, Republican David McCormick, a former hedge fund CEO who was unopposed in the primary, won the right to face off against Democratic incumbent Senator Bob Casey. In the race for a House seat, Representative Summer Lee, a far-left Democrat and a member of the so-called Squad, won the right to defend her seat in the state's 12th congressional district.
And then we come back here to state of Florida, where Ron DeSantis felt like he needed to run for president. And so 15 weeks wasn't good enough. We had to go to 6 weeks.
The Pew Research Center this week released data showing that Biden is in trouble among his fellow Catholics. A survey of 12,000 adults that Pew conducted in late February found that only 35% of Catholics hold a favorable view of Biden, while 64% have an unfavorable view. His standing among Catholics is likely to take a deeper dive after he made the sign of the cross Tuesday in Tampa, while the pro-abortion chairwoman of the Florida Democratic Party criticized the state's pro-life laws. Trump, who is not Catholic, is viewed favorably by 42% of Catholics. According to the survey, 52% of American Catholics identify as Republican or lean Republican. The number climbs to 61% among white Catholics. 35% of Hispanic Catholics lean Republican, with that number showing uninterrupted growth since 2020. The U.S. is home to 52 million Catholics. Planned Parenthood's political arm has arrived in North Carolina with plans to spend $10 million on advertising, field offices, and an effort to knock on more than a million doors in the crucial battleground state where Trump beat Biden in 2020 by a narrow margin. North Carolina Governor Roy Cooper, a pro-abortion Democrat, is term limited, and the race to replace him is very competitive, pitting pro-abortion Attorney General Josh Stein, a Democrat, against pro-life Republican Mark Robinson, who is currently the lieutenant governor. That's political news in a nutshell. Heartbeat International is an acknowledged leader in the pregnancy help movement. Begun in 1971 as Alternatives to Abortion, its mission was to serve as a clearinghouse for hotlines and pregnancy services, opening in response to the loosening of abortion laws prior to Roe v. Wade. Heartbeat International currently serves more than 3,000 affiliated pregnancy help locations, maternity homes, and nonprofit adoption agencies on six continents. It's also home to the Abortion Pill Reversal Network that has, so far, saved 5,000 lives. Priest for Life National Director Frank Pavone this week is at Heartbeat's annual conference, and he sent this video from conference headquarters in Salt Lake City, Utah.
Hey friends, pro-life leader Frank Pavone here at the Heartbeat International Conference. This is taking place in Salt Lake City, and behind me you see a bunch of flags. Now, these are flags from dozens of countries. This is Heartbeat International. So not only do we have thousands of people here that staff pregnancy centers across the United States, but we've got many people here from other countries doing the same work of saving the unborn, counseling their moms and dads, and providing the hope that replaces the despair that leads to abortion. What's happening during these days? A multitude of workshops focusing on practical aspects of running a center, focusing on medical aspects of pregnancy and helping people through a pregnancy, including complicated pregnancies, information about the abortion pill reversal technique, information about latest legislative initiatives, messaging, how to make the pro-life argument, media tools for social media. In other words, everything necessary to equip a person and a center to deal with the issue of abortion and to save babies by helping their moms and dads get through the fears that often lead to abortion. This is a fantastic conference. There are many different exhibit booths, dozens and dozens of different groups and ministries like ours who are exhibiting in the other room and providing for all these people who run these pregnancy centers and maternity homes, information in the form of books, videos, brochures, and actually trainings too. A lot of these groups do trainings that people who are serving these centers can take advantage of all through the year. So that's a little bit of what's going on here. Thank you for your support of the pregnancy centers. And Heartbeat International thanks you as well. Many of the centers, when they affiliate with Heartbeat, they receive special training and they receive special guidelines so that they're exercising best practices in the running of these centers. Goodwill is not enough. These people are filled with love, filled with goodwill, but you need the professional standards, and that's one of the things that affiliation with a group like Heartbeat provides. So the people at this conference are grateful for all of your support as well. And thank you for doing what you can for the pregnancy centers nearest to you. God bless.
Thank you so much for joining me on Pro-Life Primetime News, produced at Priest for Life headquarters in Titusville, Florida. If you like this show, please consider making a donation to prolifegift.org. These donations help fund all of our work here at Priest for Life, which enables us to continue educating people to end abortion. For all your pro-life news updates during the week, please follow us on X at Pro-Life News Show. And please make sure to tune into our other shows like Just Ask Janet and Praying for America. Go to endabortion.tv for the schedule. I'm Leslie Palma, Communications Director. Remember, life is the only choice.
This has been the End Abortion Podcast. To learn more, to help end abortion, and to connect with us on social media, visit endabortion.net.